Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Ed Kilgore, who's a principal writer for the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog. He is also the managing editor of the Democratic Strategist, an online forum, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for U.S. Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ed Kilgore.
Great to be here, Ian.
And on Friday, the former president, Bill Clinton, gave a pep rally to House Democrats at their annual retreat. And of course, on Tuesday, the president gives a State of the Union address. We just got through talking about climate change with this latest superstorm to hit the Northeast. So assuming the president talks about climate change and steps up to the plate on that massive challenge, and then he's got the challenge of immigration, and then gun control was foisted on him by the massacre in Connecticut. Do you think that the president is spreading himself too thin?
Well, I don't know that he has a whole lot of choice. Obviously, getting through this last election liberated him a bit on climate change. The weather events have probably moved a number of people from being climate change skeptics to being climate change believers. You're right, the gun control issue was foisted on him. He's going to have to talk about continuing concerns about the economy. He's got a long-range agenda he's been promoting now for several years that he'll have to talk about. And then there's an impending collision with congressional Republicans over the kind of idiotic pre-planned appropriation sequester and a possible government shutdown over continuing resolution running out. So, you know, we occasionally talk about somebody having to play three-dimensional chess. This is more like five.
And in terms of the sequester and this idea that the United States government is continually held hostage to repetitive manufactured crises, do you think there's a way that he can get the message out there? I mean, the pattern is pretty clear. This is no way to run a railroad, let alone a superpower.
Right. Well, even before the elections, but certainly since then, public opinion surveys have consistently shown that while nobody's terribly popular at the moment, congressional Republicans are getting the brunt of the blame. I think if we have the sequester go through, which seems likely at the moment, and you have an immediate dampening effect on the economy, and then the drama of a government shutdown, I don't think the president's going to have to do a whole lot to ensure the Republicans get the blame. But, you know, these are real-life problems with a real-life impact on the economy, and ultimately the president's going to have to take responsibility for that, too. As to how he does all the things he needs to do in this speech and properly frames this upcoming collision, I mean, even if he did a hour-and-a-half-long Bill Clinton stemwinder, it would be tough.
So what is the problem, then, with the Republicans, Ed Kilgore? Is it that you simply can't get through to the House members and you can't shame them because of the gerrymandering? They're in these safe districts and they're only concerned about somebody further to the right of them running against them in the primary. So they don't really care about the national discourse, or it looks as if they don't even care about the economy of the United States.
Well, you know, there are a lot of different things going on simultaneously. Part of it is that, yes, they are somewhat insulated by all sorts of structural factors, not just the gerrymander, but the, you know, the fact that small states have disproportionate power in the Senate, the residual power to obstruct in the Senate via the filibuster, and the fact that they're coming into a midterm election with an older, whiter electorate. All these things, you know, give Republicans hope that they can continue on their current path and recover. I think you also have to credit the strong possibility that a lot of them believe the stuff they're saying. I'm increasingly convinced that the ultimate source of gridlock in Washington is that the two parties have diametrically opposed philosophies of government, and particularly diametrically opposed ideas of what to do immediately about the economy. Even if you could come up with a compromise, it might be the kind of compromise that cancels itself out. We may be at this point in American history where one side or the other needs to prevail to get anything done.
Again, I'm speaking with Ed Kilgore, the principal writer for the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog. He's also the managing editor of The Democratic Strategist, an online forum, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council and communications director for United States Senator Sam Nunn. So, to my mind, Ed, you're being a tiny bit kind, but to the Republicans, in the sense that we just talked about climate change prior to your coming on, and Marco Rubio doesn't even believe it exists, and he's going to give the rebuttal speech. And,
yeah.
And that seems to me to be really irresponsible, and that in many ways the Republicans are becoming a party that don't believe in facts and data.
Right.
So I'm just not sure where the ideology ends and the ignorance begins.
Well, that's always a good question. I'm glad you mentioned Rubio giving the rebuttal, because this is a classic example of how far they've moved just over the last few years. Marco Rubio is a guy who's has extremist positions on a lot of things, including climate change. He was a big supporter of the so-called cut, cap, and balance approach to the budget, which A, is politically impossible, and B, would be an economic catastrophe for the country. And yet, somehow or other, he is the new shining face of a new practical Republican Party, primarily because of his involvement in the one issue where Republicans are actually changing their positions, or thinking about it at least, immigration reform. But 2 years ago, Marco Rubio was considered the face of the new ascended extremism in the Republican Party. His mentor is Jim DeMint, the former South Carolina senator who now runs the Heritage Foundation. So I think one of the stories in politics right now that's really got me upset is this idea that the Republican Party is somehow going through a moderating phase and will come out of it not only more popular but more reasonable. I see no evidence of that whatsoever, except on the immigration issue.
But you were saying earlier, Ed Kilgore, that they'll do well in the midterms, that they're becoming an increasingly white party, and the white vote will come out in 2014?
Well, these are all relative terms. I mean, they may not do well, but they'll do better than they would have. Yeah, one of the little understood phenomena in contemporary politics is that there are two different electorates. There have been for decades, a smaller, whiter and older midterm electorate, and a larger and more diverse presidential electorate. What's different right now is that these two electorates have become disproportionately aligned with the two parties. So all other things being equal, Republicans for the time being are going to do better in midterm electorates, elections. They know that. Add in the advantage they're getting from gerrymandering in House races, more efficient vote distribution, and the fact that historically second-term, midterm elections usually cut pretty strongly against the party that controls the White House. These are all factors that will help Republicans get through 2014, and they know it. So this sort of undercuts the incentives they have to be reasonable, to help govern the country, to do anything other than hang tight and hope that conditions improve to their advantage.
Well, Ed Kilgore, I remember speaking to somebody that worked closely with Ronald Reagan in the White House, and when they had their re-election victory and were sort of meeting back in the White House to figure out what they were doing in their second term, they asked Reagan what he wants to do in the second term, and he more or less said, "I want to do everything." And they all rolled their eyes, realizing that that's not the way it works, that you really have to pick your fights and pick your priorities in your second term, because the clock is ticking on when you become a lame duck. And it seems to me that the President Obama is in that situation, in a sense, particularly with this State of the Union coming up, where he's apparently was planning and will talk about jobs, jobs, and jobs but then he's probably going to talk about climate change. He has to talk about gun control. And I guess he's going to talk about immigration, because that's one of the few things that the Republicans are prepared to compromise on. So is he spreading himself too thin?
Well, what you would hope as a possibility is that he's able to put together a speech that pulls together most, if not all, of those issues into one master narrative of how the country can regain its forward momentum after the calamities that he inherited when he was elected president in 2008. There's an economic dimension to the immigration issue. There's clearly an economic dimension to all the fiscal issues that we're battling about. I mean, you know, you remember back in 2009, a lot of people in both parties criticized him for pursuing health care reform instead of focusing strictly on jobs. I didn't fault him for that, but I did fault him a little bit for not making the economic case for health care reform. And I think you could make an economic case right now, not only for avoiding the kind of austerity policies that congressional Republicans support, but also for efforts by Republicans around the country to subvert health care reform. On occasion, Barack Obama has risen to the occasion and given really remarkable speeches. He needs one on Tuesday that can tie together these disparate issues into a strong case for public trust in his ability to advance his own agenda to help the economy and move the country forward. I don't know if he can do it, but it would be nice.
Well, Ed Kilgore, the President Clinton spoke on Friday to a retreat in Virginia for the House Democrats. He brought up the fact that the Democrats should own health care, that they shouldn't run away from it, they should own it. So what do you think about Bill Clinton's advice? It seemed to get a lot of attention in the press. He tutored them on what they should do about guns, immigration, and health care.
Well, I mean, if you look at what most Democrats and apparently the president basically believe, the key to the long-term vibrancy of the economy and to the long-range fiscal challenge is doing something about health care costs, particularly in a way that doesn't deny individuals the opportunity to have some sort of health care security in their own lives. I think he needs to begin making that case very, very strongly, and Democrats around the country do too. Health care reform is not a distraction from economic or fiscal problems. It's essential to it. And at the moment, you have a minimum of 9 Republican governors in some very key states doing everything possible to obstruct the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. This will not only deny millions of people health insurance, it will also frustrate efforts to get a handle on health care costs. So all these things do fit together. Everybody isn't Bill Clinton, who was unusually good at pulling together a lot of different issues into one strong narrative. But I agree, that's what Democrats need to do, and it's what the president needs to do on Tuesday.
And one of the things that Clinton told the House Democrats at their retreat was he talked about the austerity trap and how Paul Krugman has been right when he keeps talking about these things. Everybody that's tried austerity in a time of no growth has wound up cutting revenues even more than they cut spending, because they just get into the downward spiral and drag the economy back into recession. That's quoting Bill Clinton. Do you think President Obama can make a stand at the State of the Union? He's got a good bully pulpit there, a lot of people watching, and put the Republicans on notice that if they go ahead and push this sequester and take all that money out of the economy, they are going to create a new recession. And all of the recovery since the 2008 crash will be out the window. And it seems cruel and unusual punishment to the American people.
Well, yes, I think he does need to make that case, and I think he can. I think he needs to constantly draw attention to the fact that even those Republicans that want to avoid the sequester simply want to substitute even larger short-term domestic spending cuts for what would happen with the sequester, so it'd make it even worse. So, absolutely, part of the progressive critique of the president over the last, off and on over the last 2 or 3 years, has been that he's made too many concessions on spending reductions. Actually, his position all along has been that we need two things simultaneously. We need short-term fiscal stimulus to keep the economy growing and long-term steps to bring the federal budget into alignment that do not affect the current economy. Somehow or other, that message has not gotten through very clearly to the public, and I think, again, Tuesday is the perfect opportunity to do so.
So on your other point, Ed Kilgore, that the Republicans are hanging on there, and then they're not so worried that even though they're polling at 8% of approval ratings, and frankly, I wonder who that 8% are, but that they feel confident that they'll do well in the midterms in 2014 because that's just the way the historical model operates.
Well, I think there are two things going on here that you do have to keep in mind. You know, one, the current trajectory of the Republican Party is part of a half-century-long march of the conservative movement to take over the Republican Party. They finally succeeded, and they're not going to give up very easily just because of one or two or even three bad election cycles. The second thing to keep in mind is that they're playing a long game. The opportunity to do what they really want to do, which is to reverse and roll back the whole New Deal Great Society legacy, they can take a number of bites at that very big apple, and it only takes winning once. So, you know, I don't think they're that focused on short, a lot of them, focused on the short-term electoral prospects of the Republican Party. It won't affect most of them. They don't have to control the White House or Congress to have significant power to obstruct, as we keep seeing. So, I'm not so sure that they're deluded in that belief that they can play an obstructing role from a minority position. But I do think we need to recognize that, you know, Republicans are not simply motivated by their reading of election polls for 2014 or 2016. And that makes them very dangerous.
Well, Clinton acknowledged that in his speech to the on Friday to the House Republicans at their retreat, that the Republicans are gearing up for a massive effort in 2014 like they did in 2010 when they caught the Democrats by surprise. Now, presumably, they won't catch them by surprise in 2014. But would that mean that, is there a way to break that cycle? Because one of the statistics that was so extraordinary was in 2008, about 140 million Americans voted for Obama and the Democrats in a landslide. In 2010, about half of that, about 75 million, voted. So that deficit, it's almost half of it. How do you get that other half out in a midterm?
Well, I think you have to be realistic. Again, this disparity between midterm and presidential turnout is nothing new. It's been this way for decades. You can't simply wish it away. A lot of the people who are now an important part of the Obama building on some of the technologies that worked so well in 2012, and, you know, and there are opportunities to peel away a portion of the Republican coalition. You know, right now, over 65 white voters, white seniors, are an increasingly important part of the Republican coalition. As recently as 2006, Democrats broke even in that vote. So I think Democrats have to be realistic about their what they can do in a midterm election. But they could certainly actually make gains in 2014, and then maybe that would produce a sense of realism in the Republican Party and, to use the president's words, break the fever. You could only hope so.
Well, Ed Kilgore, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Always a pleasure, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Ed Kilgore, who's the principal writer for the Washington Monthly's Political Animal blog. He's also the managing editor of The Democratic Strategist, an online forum, and a senior fellow at the Progressive Policy Institute. He was formerly vice president for policy at the Democratic Leadership Council, communications director for United States Senator Sam Nunn, and a federal state relations staffer for three governors of Georgia. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking with an author and journalist who has covered the LAPD more than anybody, and of course the LAPD is under siege at the moment.